Hello and welcome to In the Back Room Addendum version.
Not addendum. This is addendum.
I'm Mr. Shank.
And I'm Mr. Woods.
Basically, we're just adding to what we realized that you guys were struggling with. And so we figured we'd make a shortened version of it and go through all of them.
Yeah, basically, that's the extent of it.
So on the Greece test, geography was a big thing, and I did notice that the development of city-states, the mountains and seas, I don't think they realized there's a lot of mountains and seas there.
Yeah, I don't think that quite got through to the degree that mountains had an impact on the city-states. Yeah. Right, mountains don't keep Greece separated from everybody else. They keep the Greeks separated from each other.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, if you want to visit another place, you just get in a boat and sail there.
Stop on a boat and sail away.
It's all over the place. Trade is huge for the Greeks. But, yeah, getting to one another is a bit more difficult. Overland, it's the mountains. I mean, like you talked about with Delphi, it's
incredible.
Straight uphill, switchback mountains. So city-state to city-state was difficult. But trading with other people, not so much.
Yeah.
And that kind of leads us to our next point with the seas. So I was entertained, definitely, by some of the responses there. But so the sea is a place to gather food, right? Because you can eat things that come out of the sea. We do it all the time. You can trade and transport things.
Right? And so you get cultural diffusion that way, too.
Yep, definitely. So you know, languages, art, religion, all that kind of stuff spreads through trade, through interaction, through people moving around. What you cannot do, however, is drink the water from the sea. I don't know if they thought that this was a massive freshwater sea or something, but salt water is not good for you at all.
I was surprised too, because over half thought you could drink
seawater. I mean, I remember when we were looking at questions, seeing this one and going, oh man, there's no way they'll pick that. Well, it appears we were wrong. Half of you aren't going to survive the apocalypse, so hopefully it never shows up, because you cannot drink salt water. And they're not going to take the time to remove they're not going to desalinate their water through, boiling and condensation. That's just ridiculous. So just drink from one of the many freshwater springs in Greece.
You can drink it, but you're going to be dehydrated.
Yeah.
It's going to be worse for you.
Yeah. Yeah. That one surprised me. The other thing that came up was, using the sea to help with fortresses. And so this one, I mildly understand what you're saying if you're an individual that chose this. It's probably because you think of the sea as being a natural barrier for Athens, maybe, right? On a peninsula, and so the sea helps defend them. That's not the way the question was phrased, though. It's asking you what the seas make available to the people, and they do not make the help for building strong fortresses. Right, the sea in no way helps you build the fortress. It's not like a strong foundation to set the walls on top of. So, yeah, no, sorry.
And so geography, that's a little bit there. Just know that it's there's seas, there's mountains, not a lot of arable land.
Yeah, ooh, arable.
We're the day today. The characteristics of Athens and Sparta, that was kind of a shocker that it was so widely missed.
Yeah, and I don't even know, because that was a lot of those technology-enhanced items, TEI. I don't want to believe, at least, that the most students picked wrong answers for them or got them completely mixed up. I think it was just not figuring out all of the things that were correct, or maybe picking two that are right and one that's wrong or something like that. But most of those were opposing items. So where it's talking about Sparta, if the question asks you about Sparta, it's going to bring up characteristics of Sparta for you to choose, and then characteristics of Athens. Those are kind of the two that go in opposition to one another. So if it brings up government for Sparta, it's going to bring up government for Athens. Mm-hmm. And you have to choose which one applies for whichever one you're being asked. So let's take Sparta in this case. You can't pick both. Right, you're not going to have two forms of government existing at the same time in any civilization. That's mm-hmm. It doesn't work that way.
Not at all.
So for example, if you're talking about the city-state of Sparta, and it mentions kingship or an oligarchy or anything like that, then yes, that's Sparta. But you're not choosing democracy, right? Sparta never had a democracy. In fact, as far as I'm aware, Athens is really the only one to have a direct democracy.
That's what I said. It's the only one.
So that kind of baffled me. But let's just hit the highlights for Athens and Sparta. So with Sparta, you've got this oligarchy where they had the dual kingship. Mm-hmm. They've got a militaristic society, so they're very focused on warfare. They have slaves called the Helots.
I think what maybe confused them too is when you say dual kingship, they're like, oh, king monarchy.
Oh, that could be.
And so that kind of probably threw them off. But yeah, they just work with the other old, you know, the old small group of people in that oligarchy. So you have the kings, the two kings, and then you have the, you know, a small group of people working together.
Yeah.
That forms an oligarchy.
That was another term that had them mixed up too. I saw at least some of my students, oligarchy being a group of a few rulers. And kind of what I was explaining to them is, as far as like the number of people that participate in it, an oligarchy and aristocracy are similar, right? They're both ruled by small groups. Aristocracy is ruled by the best, right? The mm-hmm. nobles, and an oligarchy is typically wealthy or military figures that are operating things. They're both small groups.
Mm-hmm.
But the question that happened to be about that didn't have aristocracy as an option. Right.
Right,
so it only left you like democracy, monarchy, theocracy, those kind of things. So,
they said theocracy quite a bit.
Yeah, they did, which surprised me. Like, I mean, a theocracy typically is still one ruler.
Yeah.
I mean, you might have like a priesthood class, but it's still one ruler that's in charge because they're the god.
Religious based.
Or the chosen of God. Yeah, mm-hmm. The religious based. So yeah, that one kind of surprised me that it was showing up that way.
Yeah, and with Sparta, they're obviously the militaristic society, but they dedicate their lives because, like you said, because of the Helots. They're very, very much different. They don't value, one of those questions too was like valuing the arts. Remember the Venn diagram?
Yeah.
They don't value it. It's basically like illegal.
Yeah, it's why we don't know much about them. They don't write things down, and you're right. It's illegal for them to participate in trade or to be artists or anything like that. If you're a citizen in Sparta, you are a soldier. That's your job. Full stop.
Yeah.
Everything else is done by slaves.
Yeah, like even if you were like, I make the joke, like if you were like doodling about, like if you're a Spartan soldier and like doodling about battle, they'll probably like cut your head off or something. Like they don't want that.
They don't play around. They want you focused, devoted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Athens, they're a democracy. As you said, they're the only ones that we know of that had a democracy where the people vote, okay, where they are directly involved. It's direct democracy.
Mm.
But they didn't always have a democracy. They're just famous for that, you know. Yeah. They started out with a monarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And then they moved to an aristocracy, which you said was ruled by the best.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have tyranny, which the two ones that we talked about were Draco and Solon.
Yeah. And I stole from you on that. Like Draco Malfoy,
Draco
bad.
Malfoy.
So Draco bad, Han Solo. For Solon.
Yeah.
So Solo good,
Solo good.
Draco bad. Apparently that's still escaped. But Draco's bad, right?
Yeah.
He's creating debt slavery. He's making this harsh law code, and he doesn't last very long. And then Solon comes in and reverses a lot
everything,
of that stuff.
Yeah.
So he's the good guy.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was blown away by some of that. But, they're ruling. They're doing this by themselves. Remember, a tyranny, they have the backing of the people,
mm-hmm.
okay? Yes, you have one person in power, but the people are okay with that. They're like, yeah, sure, but like, we were okay with it. Supported the people. And Athens had a high culture, for sure. And when you have, you know, art and architecture, and, you know, they traded. They basically did everything opposite of Sparta.
Yeah, I mean, 80% of what we talked about with the Golden Age is Athens. I mean, like, the philosophers, the mathematicians, the scientists, the development of thought, all of that takes place in Athens, not Sparta.
Mm-hmm. So know those differences between Athens and Sparta. Figure out those differences. And which that leads us into the Persian war with Athens teaming up with Sparta against a bigger enemy,
mm-hmm.
Persia. Okay? Mm-hmm. If it's Persian wars, you have to have Persia in it. Okay?
Yeah.
They don't normally team up, but these two opposite city-states had to team up in order to defeat the larger enemy.
Yeah.
And Persia loses that. You know, there's a series of battles like Thermopylae and Salamis, and you know, even before that, Marathon,
mm-hmm.
and Plataea. I mean, they end up losing. Long story short, Persia ends up losing. Athens and Sparta maintain their independence,
mm-hmm.
essentially, and democracy is preserved. for Athens.
And that's what allows the Golden Age to occur, mm-hmm. right? So after the Persian War comes the Golden Age. You've defeated this massive enemy. The establishment of the Delian League has provided Athens with a ton of money, so now they have the opportunity to focus on building the beautiful structures like the Parthenon.
Mm-hmm.
And people have the luxury of freedom to be able to think or to be able to start inventing things or talking about, you know, or math, like in the last episode we did, right? All those mm-hmm. math folks. But you have that luxury. And so you're not going to have a golden age or this great time period in any civilization if they're at war or if they've been invaded, because that's going to start a new civilization or it's going to end theirs. Mm-hmm. So a golden age or a time period of peace has to come after war. Right? So you have a war and then you have a time period of peace. And then ultimately you're going to lead into the Peloponnesian War, which is a civil war, because things can't be happy too long. Right? Mm-hmm. And so eventually it's almost, I frame it as it's almost like jealousy. Right, it's not that the Spartans were jealous of what the Athenians had, but it's more of like, how come we don't get to reap the benefits of peace the same way you are?
Yeah,
you know, it's not that they wanted what the Athenians had; they just wanted the opportunity to exploit the peace the way the Athenians
did. Yeah,
and so it kind of became about money more than anything. Really, mm-hmm. would be my
with the Delian League.
Yeah,
yeah, and Sparta having the Peloponnesian League of their own. And then they, during that golden age, they rebuilt the Parthenon,
mm-hmm.
Which is a memorial to the Persian War.
Mm-hmm.
And they inside of it, they have the goddess Athena, because she's the god of wisdom and battle strategy and war. And it's very fitting, because they're not going to be able to win any of those battles or that entire war if it's not for her.
I mean,
they
believe that. It all just makes sense. Like, the city is Athens, which is named for Athena.
Mm-hmm.
So the Athena is going to be kind of the matron of the city. And then the temple itself is a memorial to a strategic victory.
At the highest point on the Acropolis.
Exactly. I mean, it's like divine providence figuring it all out for them and setting that all up. But yeah, the Parthenon's a memorial to the Marathon, really. The victory at Marathon mm-hmm. for the Athenians over the Persians. And like you said, Athena is kind of the center of that, mm-hmm. representing the strategy. And so that plays a huge part in the Athenian ethos, or their kind of their mindset.
Mm-hmm.
But that was missed. And then so I want to talk real briefly about Pericles too, because so Pericles, we said before that he's a champion of democracy. He's kind of like a leading statesman during a democracy. Democracy.
They thought tyrant.
Yeah, they thought I had them think tyrant. I had them think aristocracy. Democracy. D-E-M-O-C-R-A-C-Y.
He's not a president.
No, he is not a president. He's certainly not a president. He probably would win an election for president. Yeah. But he's not a president. He's just a leading statesperson.
Well, that's what I said. Like, don't you think that if there was an Athenian president, like the first Athenian president, I would have mentioned him?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I guess.
I just don't know where that came from.
I don't either.
In his funeral oration, I talked about it in class specifically because I knew that I know it comes up. But I want to just read, because I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I want to read this one small segment. So I'm not going to read the whole segment that they had. But the question was basically, what is Pericles emphasizing in his funeral oration? And one sentence in it sums the whole thing up for me, which is just the very first one, right? Mm-hmm. We are called a democracy because the administration is in the hands of the many and not the few. So, first of all, there's Pericles with democracy. Then you also have him basically saying that the rule or the responsibility to rule lies in the hands of the people, the many, right? Not the few. So not an aristocracy, the many people. That's civic responsibility, civic participation, if I've ever heard it, right? He's encouraging the many to then take the administration of their democracy in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
I was just stunned at some of the answers. Like, I think they saw funeral oration and picked honoring deceased heroes.
That's
100%. He spends like half a paragraph of like a 4-page speech talking about the dead.
Yeah.
He uses them as a political tool.
But not in that.
And not even in that passage. Nope. There's nothing about anybody being dead in that passage.
Nope.
There's nothing about rewarding the aristocracy. It's the opposite. There's nothing about maintaining a strong military. He makes fun of Sparta for having a strong military. Mm-hmm. It's all about civic participation. Gladly toiling on your city's behalf. Right? Work. Okay, so toil.
Yep.
Toil means to work, right? Or to do something for, on your city's behalf, right? For your city. So people gladly or happily work on behalf of or for their city. That is civic participation.
It, to a T, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know.
But, then afterwards they have the Peloponnesian War where Athens and Sparta, they fight each other. Long story short, Sparta ends up winning that with the help of Persia. And this kind of is the tipping point where you start to see Greece kind of falling off. Either the city-states start falling and a new power rises, which would be Macedonia, which is north, okay? Some of them missed that one, too. There was a question that was similar to that. Is that what you're bringing up?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, some of these, the expansion of the empire one's the one that gets me. Like, we had two questions that used maps. Ladies and gentlemen, if you get a question and it gives you a picture of any kind, use the picture to help you. It's not giving it to you to distract you. If we give you a map, we want you to look at the map.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't make it more clear than that. But so one asked about crossing bodies of water. People are picking bodies of water that don't exist on the map or assuming that rivers and seas are the same thing. Some of it was just
bizarre
nonsense. If a river's not labeled on the map, it's not going to be an answer. I don't expect you to be able to tell me that the river that flows out of the Aral Sea is the Oxus River.
Yeah.
Right? I didn't even know that until I looked at a map.
Yeah.
So I didn't expect you to be able to tell me that. If it's not colored in based on the key of the map, don't pick it as an answer. Alexander's empire was land-based, right? He's leading his phalanx army and conquering territory. Does he have ships that support him? Yes. Are they a massive part of his army? No. The only time he really even bothers to go to sea is the city of Tyre, and he builds a bridge to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He marches his army to the city. He doesn't sail to it. So Alexander's all about being on land. He had the cavalry. His whole part of the army was the cavalry. They're no use. Horses are no good on ships. And then the other element was how far did this empire of his expand? And I think the confusion may have stemmed from us saying that it went from Greece to India.
Mm-hmm.
To India. It doesn't necessarily include the whole Indian subcontinent. He makes it to the Indus River Valley, conquers that territory, and then goes back home. And then very quickly, that territory gets lost to Chandragupta, who takes over and builds the Mauryan Empire. So India is not a part of Alexander's empire. Not the country of India, not the civilization of India. He makes it to their borders and then leaves. A lot of, like, I think it was like 15 or 17% didn't even choose Greece. I mean, what unit are we studying? The first people that get conquered are the Greeks by Philip, and then put back down by Alexander. Mm-hmm. So that one I didn't understand. Some didn't choose Persia. I don't know why you wouldn't choose that. It's labeled. Yeah, some didn't choose Egypt. Egypt's not labeled on the map, but the Nile River is.
Alexandria is.
Some picked Rome. It's not even on the map. We haven't learned about Rome. We have now.
Yeah.
But at the time they took the exam, we hadn't learned about Rome. We hadn't really talked about Rome. Rome's not on the map.
Mm-mm.
Folks, don't pick it if it's not on the map. And then a large majority of them didn't choose the Hebrews. And that's, I don't know if that's because we omitted it when we talked about it, because it's not a major event in Alexander's conquest. The Hebrews are pacifists.
Yeah.
They're not fighting against Alexander. But if you look at the map, not only is Jerusalem on the map, which is the capital of the Hebrew people, but Palestine is on the map. That's the territory. That is Canaan, right? So I don't know. That one I'll own some responsibility for not bringing it up, but it's on the map. You guys have to use that. I mean, we can't predict everything that's going to be thrown at you.
Mm-hmm. Definitely not for the SOL.
No.
We have no idea.
And then the best was the question with, like, where they had to read the passage of Alexander, like, giving a record of his giving a speech to his men. Most of them understood that he's motivating his troops. Like, Alexander's troops loved him. It's why they got so offended when he started acting like a Persian. Like, mm-hmm. they loved Alexander, would follow him anywhere, literally through a desert,
mm-hmm.
for no apparent reason other than to do it. But he doesn't lead them to Europe. They're in Europe. You can't go to somewhere that you already are. Like, I can't go to the podcasting room because I'm already in the podcasting room. If I were to leave, I could then go to the podcasting room.
Correct.
But to leave means I'm going somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So if the podcasting room is Europe and Mr. Shank's classroom is Asia, when I leave Europe, I'm going to Asia, much like Alexander led his men from Europe to Asia.
To Asia.
That's as simple as that one can get.
Yeah. And then he eventually dies, and it gets split up. But the last portion of it here is some of the people that we seem to struggle on. Euclid being one of them, and geometry.
Euclid costs some folks two questions. Because he's going to show up, and that's the hallmark of these people. They can show up as options. Just because we might not ask you about someone in particular doesn't mean they're not going to be put up as a distractor. Mm-hmm. So you have to know what they are to know that they may be the wrong answer, too. And I think that's one of the bigger struggles for some of our students is, you know, well, what's on the test? Anything is on the test. Yeah. You have to know it all to know whether it's right or wrong. That's,
and John Green says, like, what's on the test? Everything.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite segments, that first episode. Yeah. Euclid is geometry. So math, right? We associate math with people like Euclid, people like Pythagoras, right? That's math.
Aristotle.
Yeah.
That's at the end of Spa, so Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, and he's tutoring Alexander, but he sets up the walkabout school, Lyceum.
Yeah.
Is that how you say it, Lyceum?
I think it's Lyceum.
But what was the question?
There was a question that asked them about what he would value in a leader, like a good leader, or government, or something like that. A lot of people chose democracy, like that he would want democracy. But Aristotle and Plato both hate the concept of democracy. They think it's terrible. Same with aristocracy; like they're not going to think that we should replace a free government with rich people. That's never going to be a good idea. But Aristotle wants a strong and virtuous leader. I mean, he tutors Alexander, who is the definition of a strong and virtuous leader.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it doesn't get right? Add your extra A in there. Remember spot Alexander. On. Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're starting to sound like Gordon Ramsay now. This fish spot is spot on.
Spot on. you've got to know that. You have to.
And that he's a philosopher. Like, you've got to keep your philosopher straight. We only talked about three of them. I know some of them have, like, similar names to other people. Like, I get that, but...
Socrates.
Yeah, that one was confused a lot. Mm-hmm. You've got to know Socrates, Aristotle, and Plato. Not in that order, obviously. It's Socrates, Plato, Aristotle. Mm-hmm. But you have to know those folks are philosophers. And just because something is similar to someone's name doesn't mean they created it. Right, Plato did not make Play-Doh just because it's similar. Aristotle did not start aristocracy just because it's similar. That's not how this works, folks. It doesn't always work that way.
Sometimes you could say, like, with Zoroastrianism.
Yeah.
But it's named after him.
And his name's Zarathustra anyway.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
The Greeks just change stuff around and make it simple. Yeah.
Butchered it.
So sometimes it is the case, I guess. That's worth acknowledging. But. Not always. Don't just assume it is.
Mm, read.
Yeah.
Read. The next one would be Herodotus, where you have Hero.us, and he's the father of history.
Yeah. I mean, if you come out of history knowing one thing, you got to know
who's... The father.
Yeah.
Know the maker. he wrote about the Persian Wars.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't the first historian, really, but he's just a more... Less biased, would you say?
Yeah, or at least made an effort to record things historically. I mean, like, one could argue that Homer, the individual writing the Iliad and the Odyssey, the story of the Trojan War, one could argue that he's telling the pseudo-history of the Trojan War, but there's a lot of other stuff going on there. There's gods and there's monsters, and it's not factual, right? It's not a history. A history tries to, at least to the best of its ability, stick to the factual information, the events that happened, and not try to make judgment on that stuff, which is what Herodotus attempts.
Mm-hmm.
But Homer's writing about, he's giving us a basis for mythology almost, right? He's writing about the gods, and he's talking about the Trojan War, the Iliad. I mean, Ilium is the name of Troy. Mm-hmm. So Iliad is Trojan War. Odyssey is the return home. And then the last thing I guess we have on here are our dramatists. So knowing the people that wrote plays or and comedies and tragedies. So that's, so as far as tragedy goes, we have Sophocles, wrote Oedipus Rex, mm-hmm. Euripides wrote about the Trojan women, and Aeschylus wrote the Orestia or the Orestian cycle about Agamemnon. And then our last gentleman there is Aristophanes, who wrote The Clouds. He's a comedian.
Mm-hmm. Aristophanes.
Yeah, funnies.
Yeah, satire, like almost like current political humor.
Yeah, yeah. Like the Colbert or
John Oliver
of his time. Yeah.
So those are some things that we noticed from the test that you guys definitely needed some assistance on and clarification on. So,
and I mean, if you want to dig deeper, definitely refer back to our older episodes. We've talked about all of this information before, both in class, it's in your notes, it's in the review guides, it's in vocab, and it's on the podcast. So definitely, if this was not enough or you're still mystified by some of this, revisit those earlier podcasts and try to get a bit of a deeper understanding on mm-hmm. them. And it's categorized relatively user-friendly for that.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. All right. This has been In the Back Room with Mr. Shank.
And Mr. Woods.
Thank you for joining us.